We're going to start tonight with a story by the festival's very special guest, David Maloof from Brisbane, who gave us a wonderful opening address last night. James will read an extract from War Baby, originally from a collection called Every Move You Make, published in 2007, and now included in David's definitive Complete Stories collection. James.
Good day. This is from, as Sarah said, War Baby by David. Charlie Dowd spent the last weeks before he was inducted and went to Vietnam riding round town in his 4ZZ two-stroke, showing himself off to people and saying goodbye. It was August and cold. High, dry skies, the westerlies blowing. He wore a navy blue Air Force greatcoat of his father's, who had been a Spitfire pilot in the war. And it was belted and double-breasted with wide lapels, and when you turned the collar up, your ears were covered. The skirts on it were so long that what Charlie saw in the long wardrobe mirror in his room, he'd been reading War and Peace, was a French cavalry officer from the Napoleonic Wars in flight from Cossacks. Anticipating his first day in camp, he'd been down to Sam Harker and had his hair cut short on top and shaved at the sides. And when he stood and contemplated himself in the mirror, he really looked the part. He had a routine. He got up late, ate the breakfast his aunt had made him, which doubled as lunch, then sat for a couple of hours in warm winter sunlight in the window of the pub. Yeah, always in the same place, looking out across the veranda rails to the median strip of the town's one main street with a schooner of beer at his elbow on the chocolate brown sill, and beside it, as a way of making himself at home, his pen, his wallet, the paperback he was reading, and the makings of the roll-your-owns he liked to smoke. You know, papers, drum tobacco and plastic wrap, and an oblong tin, you know, not much bigger than a matchbox, that contained a simple mechanism for turning them out. He took trouble over this, giving the roller a practice spin between his forefinger and thumb, and when he ran his tongue along the edge of the paper, put in just enough spit into it for the spill to be dry, but perfectly, almost professionally, sealed. He smoked a little, he read a little, and he wrote in his notebook. He was keeping notes, you know, not a diary exactly, just a couple of random thoughts. As they came to him in the drowsy sunlight in the slow early session after midday, and as they took off the moment he began to set them down and led him into all sorts of unpredictable and shadowy places where he was pleased to roam. Bemused speculations. He was tired of writing and had no book at hand. He would read the contents of his wallet, his library card and driver's license, several torn-off corners of a notepad or a newspaper with names and phone numbers on them that he could barely decipher, ads from magazines that he must have thought, when he folded them small and tucked them away in his wallet in many pockets, he might one day become useful. With a cigarette at his lips, the sun on his hands, and crease between his brows, he would give these exhibits his solemn attention, as if this time he might catch, in the evidence they offered of unfulfilled needs and monetary purposes, some reflection of himself that till now had subtly eluded him. The truth was that Vietnam and his going was the certainty he had needed to give his life direction, to close off an open and indeterminate future where he might have gone on stumbling about in a maze that had no end. He was going. He would see action. Yeah. The phrase brought a prickle of excitement to his skin that scared and at the same time gravely enlivened him. Meanwhile, though others need not see it in this light, he had organised a small carnival for himself. Around 4 in the afternoon, with the sun gone from the sill where his empty beer glass sat, he never had more than 2, he set out on his rounds. His arrival on their doorstep puzzled some people. They had not seen him in a while, in some cases a long while, and they did not immediately recognise the crop-headed boy in uniform greatcoat who loomed in the doorframe as if he'd come to deliver something official, and stood smiling and stamping on the doormat in the assurance of being invited in. They had difficulty remembering who he was. Yeah, they remembered him at last and would have known the name anyway because of his grandfather, but could not guess why on earth he had called, and why, when he settled, his long legs extended, the skirts of the greatcoat open like dark wings, he looked from one to another of them with so much wide-eyed alertness, in expectation of what, they wondered. More than puzzled, some of them were embarrassed, but Charlie wasn't. He knew very well what he was after. He wanted to know, before he went away, what impression his having lived there for a whole 20 years had made on people. Not much, he guessed, but that was just the point. They would remember his going, and they remember he would have come to say goodbye. In households where he had, for a time, been the school friend of a son or daughter, and now lost to the city, it was recalled that he had always been odd. Old-fashioned, they had called it then. A consequence of him having no one to bring him up but his grandfather and an old maid aunt. Well, he was even odder now. The way he was just sitting and looking, with the ears sticking out over the bells of his greatcoat. And the greatcoat itself, what was that? What was that about? For all his affability, some older men look him over and they were put off. They had been to war themselves. They hadn't gone around making a song and dance of it, parading about in what looked like fancy dress. He was young, of course, but no younger than they had been. Young people these days make too much of themselves. That came from sort of pop music they listened to and from the TV. Life to them was all about play acting, dressing up, sideburns, old double-breasted suits and striped collarless shirts they'd raked up from a deceased uncle's lowboy or picked up cheap from the St. Vincent de Paul's. Fleecy lined bomber jackets, and if leather was cracked and worn, so much the better. Camouflage, battle dress, and other fads. Sergeant Pepper Band uniforms. In a way that never would have occurred to them at that age, this fellow was making a show of himself and enjoying it too. And what gave him the right to prance around drawing attention to himself? And all this would have surprised Charlie. He was enjoying himself. And it was true, he did want to be noticed, but play acting? He was on his way to Vietnam. Wasn't that real enough? There had been a ballot, a lottery. The world had cast him one of its backhanded prizes, and since he had no notion himself of what his life was to be, he had accepted it. Not passively, but without complaint. He'd let a roll of the barrel decide things. Given himself over to hazard, to chance, in a spirit, as he thought, of existential stoicism. The war itself, when he got to it, would present hazards of a different sort. He had seen something of that. Body bags, statistics, fellows who brought back in one way or another a good deal less of themselves than they had taken away. He had no illusions. But chance in that case was tempered with something else. Something you yourself brought to the bar. Guts. A feeling for where to put your foot down and where not. The good luck charm of life itself, the one you were intended for. He believed, though none of this, of course, had yet been tested, that he was the possessor of all three. Beyond that, you could present yourself as you would want to be seen, and then you try to live up to it. With a rough outline in your head of a story, you could do everything in your power to act it out, to incorporate the accidents that you hit into its form, and then he incorporated the lottery and his inscription. Later parts of it, in his case, included Paris, which he definitely saw himself visiting one day, a language or two he meant to pick up, a wife, of course. He had a whole list of things he'd barely started on. He'd already read War and Peace, but he had not as yet fired a gun or been up in a plane. He'd never tasted tokay or champagne or oysters or slept with a girl or been further from home, this small town tucked into a hollow behind the range, than Brisbane on a rugby trip while he was at school. He had been sick both ways on the coach. But he was young and believed, even with Vietnam up ahead, that he had time. He had discovered in the eyes of others, beginning with his grandfather, an affectionate wish that all things should go well with him. It was partly out of a desire to extend to as many people as possible the privilege of exercising their large goodwill towards him that he appeared on so many footsteps, on doorsteps even, of what was still, for the time being, his own little world. Thank you.